Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Christine Wentz was a member of The Onion's original staff from 1988 to 1990 as a UW-Madison undergrad. So who better than her to write the definitive history of America's finest news source? Nope, I can't think of anyone better either. The title of Christine's book is Funny Because It's True: How the Onion Created American News Satire. Christine spent 6 years peeling back the layers of The Onion through thoughtful and intriguing interviews with the founders, editors, writers, and business team. She explores the way it influenced programs like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, and how The Onion predicted the future and caused people to sometimes believe that its stories were real.
My roommate is the one who started The Onion. I was 19 when Tim Keck first told me he wanted to start a newspaper. Originally, he hired me as the art director, but I didn't know what that was. So I basically became the copy editor, and I did some illustrations and wrote a little stuff. But kind of in the beginning, everybody sort of did everything.
Yeah. Why did you decide to take on this Herculean task of chronicling the history of The Onion? Because it's quite a vivid history and must have taken you a lot of time to put it together.
Yeah. This is the result of 6 years of research and writing and rewriting. I moved back to Madison from Boston in 2017, and I'd been on the East Coast for about 25 years at that point. So coming back to my college town, you naturally start thinking about what you did in college. And so I started thinking about The Onion. And this was also the beginning of the very intense conversation about fake news. And so that was on my mind as well. So I had a personal interest in what happened with The Onion, but I also thought, wow, I wonder what The Onion people think of all of this stuff that's happening right now. And that kind of drove me to do this project.
I was very intrigued by your reference to the trickster. I'm a big fan of Lewis Hyde's book, Trickster Makes This World, Mischief, Myth, and Art. I was happy to see that you are too. What is the connection between the trickster and The Onion?
You know, as I described in the beginning of the book, the trickster is a lot of different things. It's not just one thing. And there's a kind of unpredictability about the trickster that is important. I think The Onion has used comedy and like almost a form of very playful deception to point out things that are actually really important that are happening in the world. That's the point of satire. And I don't know, I guess there's a part of me that secretly hopes that somehow The Onion's perspective can turn things in a more positive way. I mean, maybe it's been doing that. Maybe that's why people still are reading it after 40 years. You know, weirdly, The Onion has been a voice of sanity, you know, behind a lot of chaos. So I don't know. Those are some of the connections that I make.
Yeah, and there's this one paragraph I want to share with you that I thought really encapsulates and really gives us a good description of the trickster and how that overlaps with The Onion. It goes like this. The trickster also tends to appear at points of change or origination. By destroying what exists, new things can arise. By sending you on a wild goose chase, you discover something you might never have otherwise considered. Are these things good or bad? Does the trickster help us or hurt us? Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think probably many people would agree that we're in a point of change right now, big change on a lot of different levels. And we don't know how this is going to go. So I guess I feel like if there was ever a time to kind of step in with creativity in a way that might attempt at least to point things in a certain direction, this is a really important time to do that. The other thing, though, is that you don't ever know what the results are going to be of what you do, you know, in the short term and especially the long term. So I think creative people also have to understand that you don't know what the outcome of what you do is, but I still think it's really important to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Was there one specific member of the Onion staff who you would identify as the trickster? Is that possible?
It was interesting, but as I wrote this book, the Onion itself became an almost entity to me. It's not just one person at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it really became very vividly clear to me that the Onion is really a collective effort. And they're really, I really did start to get like a sort of a feeling of like a spirit or like the soul of the Onion itself that was kind of almost separate from the people that were doing it. And except that all these people have worked for decades, literally, to kind of keep this thing going and like give it energy and give it a place to express itself. And so I think of the Onion itself as some kind of, you know, trickster spirit just on its own. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good answer. I think you're absolutely right about that. How would you describe the signature Onion article?
There's several different ones. So I could answer that question in a lot of different ways. The one that I really appreciated and kind of where the title of the book comes from is the style of Onion article that's just sort of stating the facts. Mm-hmm. You know, like there was a really, that can be silly or it can be, you know, more political or serious. And like there was one recently that made me laugh really hard in the new print edition, and it was "Man so hungry he could eat an orange," and I just, you know, my middle schooler heard me read that, and I just like snorted laughing so loud he like came over to see if I was okay. But like, but that kind of, you know, that's an example of a silly one. But there's a lot of kind of classic political ones, more political oriented ones, or sort of social criticism ones that seem to me to be just be stating fact, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think that's a really emblematic kind of Onion headline for sure.
I don't think we can talk about the Onion without talking about Scott Dickers. What part did he play in the history of the Onion?
Yeah, he's a very important role in the history of the Onion. He was the longest serving editor. He was kind of in and out over several times, and he was really instrumental in, I think, making the early kind of group of sort of Gen X slacker types, kind of propelling them to, you know, in a more focused way than maybe they would have done on their own. He's been an important figure in the history of the Onion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. Given your role as copy editor, did you also have a chance to write your own material? Any favorites? Maybe a certain front page feature from September 19th, 1989?
Yeah, I don't know if I can talk about it on the radio. Yeah, I was in my sort of goddess worshiping pagan phase for that mm-hmm. one. And there are a lot of jokes of that ilk, like throughout the book, actually. No, early on, the Onion was actually kind of zany in the beginning. And I actually wrote a couple little like short fiction stories, which I had forgotten I'd written until I'd gone back and looked at old copies of The Onion. I, you know, drew pictures. I, you know, contributed in very, you know, I think I wrote like some music reviews. The interesting thing though is that the first year of The Onion, so Tim Keck and Chris Johnson, the founders of The Onion, they sold The Onion after the first year to three people who had been working there, including Scott Dickers was one of them. And Tim moved to Seattle to start Seattle's Alt Weekly, The Stranger. And so basically, all of us that were on the first year of The Onion ended up in Seattle. So I became the editor-in-chief of The Stranger in Seattle for just a short but pretty important kind of growth period in the early 90s.
You've identified five primary reasons people think Onion stories were real. Could you share them with us?
So the first one is the story is in print. And I mentioned that this probably affects older generations of people who are used to a time when print meant real. You know, print was something that was edited. Yeah, I mean, like yeah. Something was edited, it was fact checked, and anything that was created by amateurs was very obviously created by amateurs, you know, and it was very obvious like what was a professional publication and what wasn't. And so, you know, if you grew up with that, it's very easy to think that just because it appears in print, it's real, right? So, and my second one is the story provides an answer to a deep need. I'm just reading for the book here. One example is new smokable nicotine sticks. Can they help smokers quit? Which was published on July 22nd, 1998. After the story was published, people who were desperate to quit smoking called The Onion asking where they could buy them, right? So right. When you really need something, you're gonna be inclined to believe something that fulfills that need, maybe that you wouldn't otherwise. Number three, The Onion confirms a belief they already have. One example is Harry Potter books spark rise in Satanism among children. Which, as I understand, and I wasn't at the Onion this time anymore, but people have told me that the outcry about this was completely ludicrous and insane and ridiculous, right? So I tell that story a little bit. Number four, the story taps into some deep irrational fear. This might include 98 homosexual recruitment drive nearing goal, which was published on July 29, 1998, which editor Rob Siegel said went up on a lot of anti-gay hate group sites saying, see, this is what they're trying to do, right? And then finally, the inability to discern multi-layeredness or irony, which I also sort of call the innocence defense. And I think we see that actually a lot. That kind of connects to like the sort of bad fake news.
What are your top five all-time favorite Onion headlines? That's tough.
Yeah, I mean, I love, I have a penchant for the silly ones. Archaeological dig uncovers ancient race of skeleton people. That's a good one. I love some of the wordplay ones, like standard deviation, not enough for perverted statistician. That one's a really good one.
Yeah, that's good, and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the famous George W. one when George W. Bush was elected by the Supreme Court, the headline The Onion ran was, "Our long national nightmare of peace and prosperity is finally over."
That's a good one. How did The Onion relocating to New York City affect America's finest news source?
Well, when they moved there, they had gone through this whole rigmarole about they were trying to actually sell out to, you know, during the dot-com boom, and that just sort of collapsed spectacularly. It didn't happen, and so they decided to move because they wanted to have a connection to their comedy peers. They wanted to be in a bigger place. You know, they're sick of being in Madison, and this is just the editorial office that moved, not the business office. So there was people were still in Madison and Chicago on the business and AV club side. And they moved there. They got all their stuff put together. They found office space. And then their first New York print edition. So at this point, The Onion was appearing in print in a number of different cities. Their very first print edition was going to be on, they moved in early 2001. The first print edition was going to be September 16th, 2001, which, you know, for obvious reasons, didn't happen. And so instead, their first New York edition was the 9/11 edition, which is one of the absolute classics in Onion history.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of thinking about that and, you know, should we do this? Would it be safe to do it? Which you explain very well in your book. In 1996, The Onion started going digital and creating online videos like the Onion News Network and Onion Sports Dome. And of course, we can't forget The Onion's parody of clickbait websites, Clickhole, because all content deserves to go viral. What impact did they have? Thank you for agreeing with me. I appreciate that. What impact did that have on the writers and the audience numbers?
When the Onion went online, it really exploded. At that point, it had been mostly a local thing, and it had been, you know, they really had their voice down by that point. They had redesigned themselves into more of the straight-up USA Today parody that people who remember the newspaper will, you know, think of The Onion as being. They were more tabloidy before that, and so they had really figured out their satiric voice, and so they were sort of fully formed, and then they went online in 96 when there just really weren't much, there wasn't much in the way of comedy websites, and they just completely exploded, and they became famous, like, almost immediately, like, in a matter of, like, weeks, you know, so it brought the Onion to everybody, not just Madison.
Mm-hmm. And Clickhole still is a viable commodity, right? Like, they're still constantly updating it.
Yeah, well, Clickhole was amazing. I think, I can't remember the exact year it started, 2017 or something like that, as it was a parody of sites like BuzzFeed and Upworthy. But to me, it was also a parody of what, at that point, you know, what, 20 years after The Onion went online, like what the sort of internet experience had become. And I thought Clickhole was, you know, some of the most brilliant work The Onion. It's very surreal. It's very dark. It's almost like a comedy horror site in a way. Clickhole, I think, is some of the strongest work The Onion's ever done, for sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think that Todd Hansen's description of satire is the best description I've ever read. It's satire is telling the truth to power. Marketing and advertising is literally telling lies on behalf of power.
Yeah, yeah. So that, and that comes up in the book when I learned to my shock and horror that The Onion, they started publishing in order, you know, to keep themselves going financially, started publishing sponsored content, which is, you know, advertorials. And I was so shocked by that, when the person first told me that, I actually had to ask them to repeat it because I couldn't believe what I was hearing, right? So that's outlined in the book when The Onion was really struggling. They had, at this point, they had, you know, very corporate owners, you know, they became a sort of one little unit and like, you know, like a private equity firm's portfolio, you know, there was just like an object that was an investment that was to be traded and discarded when it wasn't needed anymore and that kind of thing. Luckily, that's not happening anymore. But at that time, that was probably one of the lowest periods in The Onion's history, I think.
Yeah. You argue that the Onion's brand of satire is still valuable as a means of culture jamming. How so?
Well, I mean, there's something about satire and comedy that can really get to the point, you know, and there's so much spin and junk and the whole news world is just so completely fragmented. Like, there's still something in the way that humor can, like, kind of penetrate all that stuff and just kind of explode it all with one line, you know? And so I think The Onion is important. There, I mean, a lot of other people who are doing comedy online, obviously there's tons and tons and tons of it now, and people who are good at it can do that. It's not just The Onion that can do that. But, you know, it was amazing to me, you know, working on this book that people are still reading The Onion. Like, it's almost 40 years old, you know, like, how can that be possible? You know, they just got a million followers on Blue Sky. I think they're the first entity to reach. I was just like, wow, this is amazing that people are still finding this relevant. I mean, you know, are they all probably older, over the age of 40? Probably a lot of them are. But you know, at least there's one middle schooler in my house who's now a big fan.
Christine Wentz, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. It's an awesome accomplishment. Thank you so much for writing it.
Thank you for having me.
Christine Wentz is the author of Funny Because It's True, How the Onion Created Modern American News Satire. Find out more about Christine and The Onion at wpr.org/beta.
Immigration is this big scary word. You know, it sucks the air out of the room, the term immigration.
Coming up, comedian Felipe Torres Medina proves that immigration can be funny with his book, America, Let Me In, a Choose Your Immigration Story. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.